Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Three weeks after suffering a miscarriage, Candace Gow Smith becomes pregnant with Evander. It is a pregnancy dominated by a fear of miscarrying again, a wakeful night worrying that something may go wrong. But as she approaches term, she's finally able to believe that the pregnancy will result in a healthy baby, and she starts preparing for the home birth she always wanted. In this episode, we'll hear Candace tell how she birthed Evander on the bed, in the comfort of her own home, so quickly that her doula and midwife didn't have time to arrive. There's no panic or fear, just calm and euphoria as the son makes his entrance. It is a beautiful story of having the birth you always wanted, of working as a team with your partner, and of completely trusting your body. Nairi Wright, midwife and founder of Sage Femme, is with us in the studio to answer any questions. My name is Caroline Johansson, and you're listening to the podcast To Become a Mother. Welcome, Candace.
Hello.
Welcome, Nairi.
Hello. Hi.
Lovely to have you here today. Candace, you're a mom to Findlay.
Yeah.
2.5 years old.
Yeah.
And little Evander, who is 8 weeks.
That's right, yeah.
And he is with us in the studio today.
He is.
Looking adorable. And it's Evander's birth that we will hear about today.
It is, yeah.
I was wondering if you could go back to when you and your partner started thinking about it's time to have a second one.
Yeah, sure. I think I was pretty broody for the second one quite quickly when I had my first child, probably around the 4 months mark. But you don't know if it's the kind of hormones that are speaking to you. But yeah, completely besotted with kind of the whole baby thing. And I was pretty much like, we should do more. We should have more. But yeah, timing wise, it was far too early, obviously.
But was that your husband?
Yes, yes. He was just like, oh, hang on a minute. it was COVID. He was working from home, and we also decided to kind of move house as well. So there's a lot of things going on. But from a physical point of view, my period hadn't come back because I was breastfeeding. So from that point of view, it was going to be quite tricky anyway. So we just thought, you know what, we'll just kind of ride it out and just, it will happen at some point in the future. And then pretty much when my period came back, I was like, right,
let's go.
Let's go. But again, I think it took like a good few months just to get settled in a new house and stuff. But yeah, I was really kind of feeling the need to do it all again.
When did your periods come back?
It was around 16 months after birth. So it was quite strange in the sense that I was really like missing my periods. All my friends had, my mum friends had, started getting theirs back, and I was feeling quite jealous actually. I was like, I want my period back. And I didn't feel like I could be me again until I had my period back. So I was, I was a bit worried about that in some ways, but I was assured that it could take, as long as it needed to, and it was fine. And I breastfed my daughter quite a lot, so that was kind of integral to why it wasn't coming back. And as soon as I started to drop the feeds, I started to feel twitches and changes and changes in my moods as well. And I thought, okay. And then it came back around 16 months. Then it took a little while for everything to kind of get in sync and, but yeah, so once my period was back and waited a few months after that, we thought, okay, yeah, we'll try. And of course, you don't know how long it's going to take, right? So
yeah,
we thought we'll try and see what happens, and didn't really expect it to be as quickly as it was.
How quick was it?
It was about 4 to 5 months, which felt quite quick.
Yeah.
Because we were still like, measuring hormones and temperatures, and, you know, it just felt much quicker than what we thought it would take. But yeah, so it took about 4 to 5 months, but that pregnancy ended in a miscarriage. And little Evander came not long after that, actually. He was conceived, I think, 3 weeks after the miscarriage. So I didn't even have a period in between that. So both pregnancies were quite close.
And how, with the miscarriage being so close before, how was it then to be pregnant with Evander? Did you have feelings of worry?
Oh, yeah, massively. I wouldn't let myself believe I was pregnant. And actually, we moved house recently again, and I found all the little pregnancy strips, and there was over 20, because I would just constantly test that the hormone levels were still showing or getting stronger on the strips. I was really, really worried, really anxious, convinced that I would have another miscarriage. And so I didn't want to believe that I was kind of pregnant. And yeah, eventually that kind of resulted in quite high anxiety, which I sought to get help from, because I didn't want that to kind of override the whole pregnancy journey. And I wanted to enjoy the pregnancy and I wanted to believe that I was going to have a baby at the end of it. So it did result in some kind of talking therapy, some CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which was great. It was really, really good. And it allowed me actually just to have a breather and to think about the miscarriage, which I hadn't had much time to actually think about and process, because, you know, you've got a toddler, you've got your working, it happens, and then you get back onto life the next day. And actually I needed that time to think about things and how it made me feel. So just having a few hours a week speaking about that with a therapist was really therapeutic and eventually allowed me to believe that I was pregnant and I was going to have a baby. And yeah, I could get excited by it.
Around when in the pregnancy did you feel that you could start relax into it?
It was strange, because from the moment I fell pregnant, I had this like 20-week mark in my mind. I don't know why, but it was strange, because I felt like I had to get to the 20-week stage and have the scan. And then I would be assured that actually, no, I am pregnant and it's going to happen. And in a weird way, that's how it did actually pan out. Like, I remember having the scan at 20 weeks and just feeling like a huge weight off my shoulders. And there was definitely a change. And even my therapist, who was like making, she did these kind of graphs of, I was doing questionnaires each week, which allowed her to assess my levels of anxiety and my thoughts and stuff. And when we did an assessment of looking back, she noted that that was when my anxiety dramatically reduced. Yeah. So yeah, it was around 20 weeks. I felt like I could actually, believe it and start to think about the future and start to enjoy it and just take a breath and not convince myself that every twinge or every feeling was something that bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
And then from there, I still had these kind of like anxieties, but it was much, much less. And yeah, it was just nice to be able to enjoy the second half of the pregnancy.
Yeah. And in terms of physically, how were you feeling?
I always kind of say like the first pregnancy was like a luxury pregnancy, because it was with the second one, it was more physical in terms of, the challenges. So then I had quite bad pelvic girdle pain, which I'd never experienced with Finley. And I always heard of it, but I was like, wow, no, this is quite uncomfortable.
And Naomi, what is pelvic girdle pain, if you're sitting out there listening to this, wondering?
It's when the bit of cartilage in the front that joins the two halves of the pelvis together, because of the increase in the hormone relaxin, can sort of overstretch, and it can be really painful, and it often gets worse as pregnancy progresses. And the only eventual cure is the birth of the baby. But unlike some pregnancy side effects, complications, it doesn't go immediately after birth. So some women will still feel a lot of tenderness post-birth. And if you have that kind of pain, it is important to see a physiotherapist. It's really important to make sure that you're not overextending, so you're not hyper-abducting, opening your legs too much. So you have to be a bit kind of ladylike, as if you're riding a horse side saddle. Some women may even end up needing crutches. So the severity varies a lot. It is often shown with women who are hypermobile before pregnancy. And it sometimes results in women having faster labours, which is very interesting, but not always, I have to say. But yes, it's a difficult position, situation to manage. And certainly during the birth process, the people who, perhaps if somebody has an epidural, the people looking after you have to be really aware of this condition so that they don't put you in positions that will actually really make this condition worse.
Okay. And so that you will feel it after you've given birth as well if they don't take care.
Absolutely. And sometimes you'll feel it after birth regardless of how you look after yourself. It just can be very painful. Mm. Some women get to the point where they're not even able to walk up and down stairs. Mm. So it varies an awful lot.
Yeah.
And I can imagine with a little toddler running around, that's an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, it was kind of it had like an emotional element to it in some ways, because I felt like I couldn't, as you say, like do anything with her it was probably like 30 weeks into pregnancy. And I felt like I'm going to make myself much more worse if I, you know, if I pick her up, or if I kind of play with her in the way that I'm used to, or just sitting is so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and then you might find yourself getting to a position that is comfortable, but then having a toddler kind of jump on you. Yeah, and obviously they don't understand, so that's quite difficult. But yeah, I found it very strange kind of sensations, and it kind of did kind of, as you're saying, like as the pregnancy progressed, did get worse, and just finding a position that's comfortable was quite tricky. But I do remember, like, maybe like a day or two after birth, I remember putting my knickers on and feeling like, oh my God, I can move my legs again. I can actually move my thigh like to a position where I can, because it really restricts your movement to such degree. And even like, you know, when you've got a shower in the bath, getting over that panel into the bath was just agonizing. So even just stepping into the bath, I was like, oh my God, I can do it now. Yeah. I can move back into the bath. And it was, you forget like how your body was in quite a lot of discomfort. Yeah.
And you almost get used to it, don't you?
You get used to it, yeah.
Dealing with it every day.
Every day, yeah. So it just becomes, and you find ways to maneuver yourself.
Yeah.
So yeah, I remember, you know, a few days afterwards thinking, wow, I've got it back. I can put my knickers on. I can get into the bath. I can go down the stairs. Amazing. But another physical thing that I've suffered with both pregnancies is quite severe heartburn. And I know that's kind of like, but this is like, no, yeah. This is, you can't, enjoy foods, drinks, exercising, sleeping was just unbearable. I would have like quite bad reflux in the night, so I'd wake up unexpectedly with like this kind of reflux coming out of my mouth, and it was not very nice. There's not much you can do for it but then just kind of take ice cubes.
You can manage it to a certain degree by making sure that you don't eat big-ish meals sort of later on in the day. Certain foods will definitely make it worse. Mm. So it's avoiding things like cooked cheese and cooked tomatoes.
Okay.
Having more pillows so you're more upright. Trying to, if you have a bigger meal, have a brisk walk for 5 minutes. Anything that will get your metabolic rate up a little bit. Mm. And there are, you know, remedies that you can buy over the counter. So do talk to the pharmacist about things that will, in the short term, alleviate heartburn. Mm. But the good news is that heartburn goes the very instant the baby is out. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
And why do some women get it?
Well, the progesterone hormone slows the whole digestive system down to enable your body to get more nutrition from the food that you eat. But it's why things like heartburn and constipation are so common. It's all about this lovely hormone, progesterone. But the reason some women get it so badly, other women don't get it at all, is just about why do our bodies differ anyway?
Yeah.
Different people will have different genetic predispositions to things, but it's certainly never anything that will cause the baby any harm, but it can make you miserable. Mm. So it's just about, from very early in pregnancy, trying to get used to smaller meals more frequently rather than sticking to that sort of three meal a day mentality.
Yeah.
It's the
you learned the hard way.
Yeah. But the first thing I've done with both pregnancies is as soon as I've given birth, I'm like, right, toast and Marmite.
Now.
Now. and a hot cup of tea.
So when you got to the 20 weeks mark and you started to relax a bit, were you able to put your mind towards birth and thinking about that?
Yeah, I could. And I was really excited by that prospect. Mm-hmm. I'd hold that off for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of started visualizing the birth, what it would be, and felt quite excited by it. And obviously meeting the little fella.
What type of birth were you thinking about?
For us, it was home birth, much similar to what we planned for Finley, our daughter. That kind of suited the kind of environment that we felt most comfortable in. And we did plan a home birth with Finley, but she had meconium when the waters broke. So that did end up, we ended up transferring to hospital. So there was kind of like a stubbornness in me that kind of made me feel like, no, I'm definitely going to do a home birth this time. But obviously you have to, you know, it could happen again. You could end up in hospital again.
Mm.
But no, for home birth, it's always been a thing where we felt like that's what we wanted to do, you know, in the comfort of our own home. And you get, well, in Hackney, where we live, we were assigned, you get assigned a midwife, a home birth midwife quite early on. Mm. So you can have the comfort of your home, but at home while you're doing the checks, you know, the antenatal, they come to your house. So that was always quite nice. And yeah, just kind of, it's just always felt like an option that we've really wanted to do in both pregnancies. So that was, it was about looking to that and feeling like, what can we do to kind of make the environment at home a nice environment? Because of the complications that happened with Finley's birth in terms of the meconium and getting to hospital and then some of the things that happened in hospital, we decided to hire a doula.
Are you able to describe what happened with Finley?
Yeah, sure. So my birth kind of progressed quite quickly at home. I was doing really well, actually, like with the contractions. And, well, I was kind of like just kind of getting through it all, and my waters broke. And at that point, there wasn't a midwife. The midwife hadn't come. I think she maybe assumed that it was my first birth, so it could take a little while longer than what it did. But things did move quite quickly, and my waters burst on the bed. But my husband kind of recognized that there was meconium in my waters. So we moved to the bathroom and my waters kept on coming, and there was quite a lot of meconium. So we rang the midwife and she said, well, rather than me come, you need to go to hospital.
Nairi, why is that? Why is meconium an issue?
We don't always know for sure why a baby has passed meconium. We know that later babies are more likely to pass it, so babies that are born sort of closer to 42 weeks. But we also know that passing meconium can be associated with distress. It certainly isn't always, but we have to presume potentially that the baby might be distressed. So if meconium is passed, you want to do some continuous monitoring so you can make sure that the baby is still happy. So that's one issue. And the other one is that a small number of babies, when they pass meconium during the actual birth process, may inhale some of that amniotic fluid with meconium, and that thicker particle might get stuck in the baby's lungs and cause problems. I have to say that most of the time it doesn't.
Mm.
So, you know, if you're being cared for and you see meconium, please don't automatically panic. Midwives and obstetricians are very used to it. There is nothing that you can do to make it not happen. And I can go months without seeing a baby pass meconium before birth, and then the next three births in a row, there'll be meconium. Mm. And if it happens to you in one pregnancy, it's no more likely to happen the second time than to somebody else.
Mm. So if you see it, you don't need to panic and think, oh my God, my baby is definitely in distress.
No, not at all. No. It's just really the actions that are taken as a precaution to keep babies safe. Mm. And so if the birth is happening at home and meconium is seen when the birth is imminent, the safest thing is actually to remain at home, but to get the ambulance crew there. But with a first birth, there is usually time to transfer to hospital. And so the midwife gave completely the appropriate advice to Candice at that time, which was to go to hospital for the monitoring.
That's right. And, you know, it was the first birth, so we, you know, hadn't really had experience of it before. But I did struggle getting to hospital because at that point I felt the baby kind of transcend and I was starting to push and I couldn't fathom how I was going to get to hospital because of the position that I was in and the stage of birth that I was in. So that was quite tricky. Somehow we ended up transferring and I ended up going into an Uber and contracting in an Uber with the, you know, baby's head quite, you know. And yeah, we got to the hospital and I mean, I knew Finley was pretty much there. Oh, I can hear little Evander. We'll go for a little bit longer, but he might need a feed soon.
Yeah.
But they did ask to kind of examine me and they said, oh yes, you know, you're fully dilated. And so they took me straight into a labour ward. And it was, you know, very kindly, the midwives looked at my maternity notes and kind of honoured the kind of environment that I wanted. So they put like little candles up and lights and closed the blinds and made the atmosphere as kind of relaxing as it could be. And my husband stuck up some affirmations on the wall. And so, you know, that was great. But it ultimately did end up in my kind of birth stopping. So my contractions completely just stopped and the midwife had to kind of really rub my stomach to kind of get them going again. And it was quite tricky because I think there was also an element of pressure to get baby out because of the meconium.
And the contraction stopping like that, Nari, is that something that you see in home births transferring to hospital?
I think any kind of disruption in any labour, anything new, a change, will have the potential to slow it down or stop it. So it might be somebody that's planned a hospital birth and at home they're contracting really, really well and they definitely feel like it's active labour, but then they go in the car and it slows right down. Or it might be that the hospital environment itself, the kind of brighter lights, the equipment, meeting strangers, all of those things can slow things down. At a home birth, it might be the arrival of a second midwife that the person hasn't met before, who perhaps is a bit louder, or it might be somebody coming into a room panicking. There are so many things. It might be a toddler suddenly crying. All of those things can slow down labour. And I think it's because of our primitive mammal response. Women, so mammals, dogs and cats will often go into a small dark cupboard and give birth uninterrupted. And I think in an ideal world, women would like to go into small dark cupboards. But, you know,
it's not possible. So yeah. I can imagine then getting out, doing a transfer, being in quite a stressful situation with an Uber and then coming to a bright lit hospital, even if they're trying to make it nice and then having any sort of pressure that now you need to get this baby out. It's just instant mood killer when it comes to
it felt like
contractions.
Yeah, and the change in environment and, you know, it's just kind of, it wasn't what I wanted. ultimately. And I didn't, you know, there was a lot of new stuff to suddenly take on board that hadn't been really in my vision or our vision. And just even like the kind of, there was slight worry there, obviously, because we had transferred because of the meconium. So there was this kind of at the back of it, well, is she okay? You know, is my daughter okay? Oh. And they had the kind of, are they called the obstetricians? Am I saying that right? So they were at the end of the bed and I felt like I was literally like performing in front of them.
Yeah.
And also quite interestingly, the language changed. The language of the midwives changed. So it's almost like, you know, you have to push now, you have to push. You know, you're only giving me half a good push, you know, and this kind of language that I didn't want was now there. And that really did, you know, knock me off. And meanwhile, your body is just, you know you're having to birth and there's just a lot of stuff going on. Eventually they came back, my contractions, but then the pushing was quite intense. And even though I did the hypnobirthing training and I knew that being on your back is just, you know, the worst position, and I hadn't been on my back throughout the whole of that birth, I was somehow on my back pushing with my legs up and really straining. And I don't know, I had this realization like, hang on, what am I doing? This is not right. It's not happening. It's the, you know, the baby isn't coming like this. And actually it was my husband who could see that I was probably getting quite distressed and annoyed with the midwife who was with me. He kind of said, get up, get on your hands and knees, turn around. And he just grabbed my hand and we put some music on and he just kind of said in my ear, like, just blank everything out. You and 3,000 other women are right now doing this thing. You can do it. You know, look at your affirmations on the wall. And just having that just made me like get back into the zone.
He sounds wonderful.
Yeah, what a wonderful
Can we employ him as a doula?
Yeah. he did really good there. And amongst all that kind of madness, he kind of pulled it back and she came. But yeah, it's because of that, I didn't want that again, obviously. But at the same time, I knew that, well, it could happen again.
Yeah.
You know, but we wanted to have a doula with us to kind of support us, to be our advocate, to kind of manage all that other stuff that could potentially happen so that we could just focus on the birth and be together.
Yeah.
And we hired someone that we knew quite well. She was my yoga teacher throughout both pregnancies and she supported us postnatally with my daughter Finley, and it felt like a very natural process to invite her. And we felt very excited. Then we had the doula. We knew we was going to start and hopefully finish the birth at home. We had the support of the home birth team. So felt very relaxed about the birth of Evander and very excited by it.
I think there might be some listeners out there thinking, oh my God, a home birth, that sounds very risky. You're far away from the hospital. Nairi, what would you say to that?
Well, in certain situations, home birth is the safest option.
Mm.
And for somebody that had a very quick first labour and nearly gave birth in an Uber, a home birth is actually a much safer option, absolutely. Home births, with careful planning and consideration of lots of different factors, are completely safe. In London, you're never far from a hospital. It's why women in London can actually choose which of the 4 or 5 hospitals within an hour of me may I want to give birth in, or they can choose to have a home birth and then they know that there are 4 or 5 hospitals within easy travelling distance. Obviously, if you live in the Outer Hebrides, you don't have quite so many choices.
Mm.
Your medical history has to be taken into account. And I would say, where you feel comfortable. There is no point having a home birth if you're terrified of not being near an obstetrician.
Mm.
Similarly, some women are absolutely terrified of hospitals, and so they may not birth well in hospital. I think it's really important that within the constraints of somebody's medical history, they're allowed to give birth where they feel safest.
Mm.
And we absolutely shouldn't judge people for the choices that they make.
Mm.
There isn't a one option that is best for everybody. And, you know, I think the idea of having a baby and then being able to relax in your own bed with your other child, perhaps sleeping in the other room, in the morning, having your own food, I can't think of anything better, really. Mm. But somebody else might prefer the NHS PG tips and the jam and toast, which, by the way, is wonderful. So.
And just in terms of how risks are managed then, because if something unexpected comes up at home, how would the midwife deal with that? Because there is, even though there are hospitals close by, you know, further away than if you are actually on the labour ward, is that taken into account by the midwives in terms of, you know, when they see a small risk, they're escalating it faster than they would in a hospital? Like, how are those things managed?
First of all, in my practice, we always aim to have 2 midwives at a home birth.
Mm.
And that's so that one can actually be dealing with the practicality of a potential emergency. The other person is making the necessary phone calls, etc. That's not to say I've never delivered a baby on my own, but because sometimes babies come very quickly, but that's one thing. The other thing is you do have to slightly be thinking ahead. So, for example, if I'm at a home birth, the baby's about to arrive and there's meconium, I will call an ambulance at that point, even if the baby comes out and it's absolutely fine, because I don't know. So there is an element where you have to think ahead a little mm-hmm. bit. At every single home birth, we will have resuscitation equipment out prepared. And although that can be stressful to look at, can be sort of hidden away a little bit, but it's really important to have it there, because some babies, you can't always know beforehand that they might have trouble taking that first breath. And then another measure would be having the drugs prepared just in case somebody hemorrhages. And I guess that the most important element is the selection process in the beginning. So if somebody has a history of high blood pressure or their placenta is low lying, they're not the best candidate for a home birth. So there are considerations.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And Candice, your due date comes and goes. Is that right?
With both, I was pretty much 2 days after my due date with Finley, and I was 2 days before with Evander. But I actually think like due dates, I never kind of fixated on those, really. I don't kind of know if you can be so precise.
Yeah.
And I think actually the kind of person I am, that having a due date would probably cause me a lot of anxiety, because I'd just be like fixated on this kind of due date. I'd like to instead visualize it as a period of time in which baby can come, which is actually, it's quite a long period of time if you think about it. It's a good few weeks, and you don't want to be sat there like, you know, looking at the clock thinking oh. So yeah, keeping myself relatively busy throughout that kind of period of like it's coming, it's pending.
That's a good way of thinking about it.
I think it helped my kind of mindset. Might not help others, but definitely not kind of pinpointing it's going to happen on this date. And it just helps us as well with, like, you know, everyone always says, oh, when's baby due? When's baby due? And rather than just give like an actual day, it's almost around this period. So yeah, it's helped us, and just kind of we keep, you know, little things like, oh, we'll go to the park on that due date, or we'll do you know, just normal things, you know, and just, as I say, not sitting there wondering when it's happening.
Yeah, twiddling your thumbs. So when do you start feeling that something is about to happen?
With Finley, it was a case of having a few signs. So I had the mucus plug, I think it's called, I think 2 days before, and then it was a case of not really having much else other than waking up with kind of period pains. And then with Evander, there was no obvious signs that he was due. But again, it was that waking up with period pains is what I would liken it to. And then pretty much it's quite quickly after that transcends into kind of active labor.
Yeah. And can you describe how that initial start of your labor was
with Evander?
Yeah
So that was, it was quite weird actually. I was having a dream about having period pains and thinking, oh, I think this is the labor, and then actually waking up and oh no, I am having these pains. Okay, but I think when it's that kind of like period pains, and they're quite, you know, heavy period pains, but you're still kind of like in this weird like, well, is this it? Is this labor? Because you go through periods throughout the whole pregnancy of having like backache and slight twinges, and quite, you know, so you don't really know until a little bit later on, when you're kind of like, these are getting a bit more intense. The feeling's getting a bit more intense. There's a bit more pressure. And then I guess with both, it was a case of like, that's a contraction. And again, with both, it was a case of, let's just monitor those contractions. How quickly are they coming? What's the level of intensity? Where am I? Am I able to kind of breathe through it quite easily? Or, you know, or actually, is this getting a little bit more difficult?
Yeah.
And just being mindful of what's physically happening to the body. And that mindfulness really kind of helped us with the speed at which the birth happened, because I do birth quite quickly. Mm. And that's a lot to kind of get your head around, because the transition of feelings, which, you know, the physical feelings that are going on, is quite sudden. So, you know, going from, with Evander, for instance, waking up from that kind of sensation of heavy period pains to actually starting contracting to having very close, intense waves of pain to then, you know, having that pressure and having your waters burst and then actually being ready to push. That was all very, very quick. I think it was like 3 hours. So that's a lot to kind of, for your body to go through, never mind your kind of brain to kind of get hold of. But actually, just checking in with yourself and just knowing where you are and kind of, okay, this is happening. Just helped myself in some ways. But yes, it can be different for different people. So, you know, I had a friend who was contracting for, I think it was over a week.
It is incredible how different it is.
Yeah, it really is.
It could take so long.
But
I can imagine with such a fast birth that, as you say, so much is happening very quickly, probably very strong feelings. So being present in your head must be a key thing.
Absolutely. And these little things that you can do, you know, putting on your fairy lights, having some music, if you have the chance to get that set up, creating just a space that you feel like you have some control over, because the physical side of it is you don't really have much control of. So if you can kind of grasp hold of something which you think, nope, I'm setting this environment up. I mean, for Evander, it was such little things, because it was happening so quick. I couldn't even get downstairs to where we thought we would birth. So downstairs we had a pool, and we had, that's where most of the lights were set up. That's where my affirmations were set up. My birthing ball, all of those things were set up downstairs. I didn't even move outside my bedroom. I stayed in my bedroom. Nevertheless, whilst I was in my bedroom, I was still able to keep the curtains closed, put on some lights, you know, set up the kind of padding, you know, the towels and stuff like that. And I think this is where you never know where you feel most comfortable. You know, you think, okay, well, we will birth here, but actually your body just completely tells you. But being, just listening to your body, just listening to where you are. I knew in that moment, I didn't want to move. I didn't want to move in, even in my own home, to go downstairs. I just wanted to stay in my bedroom. And that was fine. And then I felt more relaxed.
Where was Finley at this point?
She was in bed right next to our room, which I was kind of worried about, you know, where would Finley be while I was birthing? Not worried in the sense that I didn't want her to see it at all, because I actually, you know, I think that would be fine. I think, but I was kind of like more worried about how I would birth with that potential interruption. So we had made plans, depending on what part of the day would happen, but yeah, she kind of slept through it all, which is really odd because she's not a great sleeper usually. And, you know, I didn't hold back. I was kind of, you know, in my zone and making all the noises that you would make. And but yeah, she slept right through it. And the birth actually happened so quick that our doula didn't manage to arrive, nor did our midwife. And the first person that came was a very kind and gentle ambulance man who, you know, he could have potentially kind of come in and disturbed all the kind of the vibe that was going on. But he had recently done a home birth himself as a father. Like he home birthed his, so he knew exactly the kind of environment and the kind of, you know, it's quite a, I'd imagine walking into that space, quite a big thing. But he was very sensitive. But yeah, we birthed on our own in our bedroom, which was just amazing. And I think a lot of people said, oh, that must have been really scary or must have, but it wasn't. It really wasn't. And again, it's just kind of like trusting my body and trusting that, you know, I think it goes back to that. There is a hospital nearby. I have got help coming. You know, we had the ambulance on the phone. We had the midwife on the phone. They were telling us what to do. We felt secure in the environment that we chose to have the birth. So, and at the end of the day, there's nothing we could do to stop it. He was coming and we just had to kind of
go with it.
Yeah.
And it sounds so nice the way you're describing with your husband, that you're like a team doing this together.
Yeah, it was lovely. I felt with both births, we completely like kind of were a team. We did hypnobirthing with Finley. Mm-hmm. We did a course of hypnobirthing, which was great because, you know, pregnancies, women experience pregnancy. And it was nice to actually do something together, you know, so we could both understand the physiology and the kind of physical side of things and also kind of the emotional and practical side of things. And we learned all these things together. It's not as if I knew loads beforehand. We learned it all together and we discussed openly what kind of birth we would like mm-hmm. and what kind of options in terms of pain relief or, you know, options in terms of do you want the how to deal with the placenta or how to deal with the cord cutting. So there is quite a lot of stuff that you might need to kind of go through just to know what your preferences are. And we made those decisions together and we talked about, you know, the what ifs so that should different eventualities happen, we kind of knew where we would be.
Yeah.
And I think my husband also felt very supported with the idea of having a doula second time round, because the first time round there was that kind of immediate, let's go to hospital. And that kind of put a lot of pressure on him to be, you know, supporting me, but also being the person to make decisions.
And advocate.
So knowing that actually there was a third person who could give me support and help with, you know, so Finley, for instance, woke up, he could deal with Finley whilst I was still getting support. Or, you know, if I was in discomfort, he had someone else to help me get through that discomfort and all those kind of little things. But yeah, being a team was a big part of it and made the delivery, the birth, you know, he was great. He just kind of like, I was on the, he had two mobile phones in his hand. I was there on the hands and knees and on the bed. And yeah, we just kind of got on with it and just kind of, you know, did it. It didn't feel scary at all. It felt really lovely. And the people that then came into the bedroom were all really respectful. And it was just a lovely moment.
Sounds magical.
I was just going to say that we already established in the first birth that Candice's partner is great at what he does. So he was, you know, clearly quite capable of delivering a baby.
He's up for hire.
And then you're given birth and the midwife and doula, they arrive. And what happens next?
So there's some kind of preferences in terms of like what would you like to do with the cord? And my notes aren't there, but they're downstairs and stuff. So there's little things like, you know, what would you like to do? And so we kind of like honoured the delayed cord clamping, and we had to then deliver the placenta. So the contractions built up again quite quickly after birth. Obviously, Evander was checked out, but we decided to kind of leave the cord be, and I just kind of put him on my chest, and the contractions for the placenta started to build up. And actually, they were quite intense. They were quite, I guess, a bit like, oh, hang on, I wasn't quite ready for this level of intensity. And it felt quite, it was, I don't know where the placenta was laying, but it was a lot of backache and a lot of kind of pain on my anus. And it felt very, very uncomfortable. But again, with the support from the doula, she was able to kind of move me in positions, which is quite tricky when you've got a baby attached to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, the best kind of position for us was to kind of scoop baby in one arm, go on my hands and knees, quite animal-like, I guess, and then kind of allow the placenta to come through in that position with some pushes. Then it came in all its glory. And both times we've laid the placenta out and really inspected it and kind of, oh, I'm just so interested in the placenta. Find it amazing, but
they're huge organs.
They're massive.
Is there anything, I mean, in terms of timing, how long time does it normally take, Nairi, before the placenta comes?
I probably should say there are two ways of doing it. And after a completely straightforward birth, particularly one at home, the most straightforward option is what we call the physiological delivery of the placenta, which is totally natural. And gravity, sometimes breastfeeding, and keeping a nice calm environment helps to get placentas out. And it can take, I think an average would be 15 to 20 minutes after a baby is born. The other way is quicker, and it's often more appropriate if the uterus has been overworked in any way. So we're talking about the long labours or an induced labour. Anything like that, or a multiple birth where the uterus has been overextended or lots of fluid, for all of those reasons, the other method is more appropriate, and that's called active management. And it's when the baby is born and then quite soon after birth an injection is given, which causes the uterus to contract down, and then the placenta is normally pulled out with a gentle traction about 5 minutes later. So it's quicker and there is a slight reduction in the amount of blood loss. So for some women who are more at risk of bleeding heavily because they've had a long, difficult labour, having the injection is the best option. Whereas at a home birth or a baby born on a birthing centre, the physiological way makes an awful lot of sense. You know, why start medicalizing something that has just gone really naturally?
Mm.
And the other reason perhaps is that a small number of women, once they have the injection, will feel a bit sick. And you don't really want to be feeling all of that when you've just had a baby.
No, no.
I've still got my placenta, shall I say, in the freezer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay, I forgot about it. As I said, we moved house. And we're like, oh yeah, and the placenta's in the freezer.
What's it saved for?
Good question. I mean, my doula kind of like put the idea of like, you know, have a little thought, think about what you'd like to do with it. And we did try a little bit of the placenta. Mm. We put some in a smoothie, yeah. And which I know is going to gross a lot of people out, but. Yeah, it's not the whole thing. It's just like a little slice. And it was full of berries and antioxidants and all this great stuff. So I had a little bit. But I'm thinking of doing some kind of art with it.
Yeah.
And I'm not too sure. And if I don't do that, then I'd just like to kind of give it back to nature and just kind of plant it somewhere. But yeah, I knew it would end up in the freezer for a long time because, you know, life just gets back on track and then, you know,
a few years later,
you're like, oh yes, I forgot about the
placenta. There it is. Make sure you bury it deep. Foxes in London.
I've heard foxes, yeah.
Yeah, no, but we are coming to an end. But before we do, I just, we'd like to hear how the first few days were coming together as a family and yeah. With little Finley meeting her.
Honestly, really, really magical. Could not have asked for anything better. The moment that Finley kind of burst through the doors after we had our gorgeous moment of tea in bed and toast in bed and cuddles, and you know, it was just lovely. And she came through the door, and she's always called Evander Crumbles. So as he's been in my stomach, I've been able to convey, you know, something in my stomach and it's called Crumbles. And yeah. She's like, Crumbles! And she kind of like jumped on the bed and she was like, good girl, good girl, good girl. I think she was saying to me, good girl. But yeah, it was lovely. We just kind of all stayed in bed and just took the first day really slowly, but also doing really like normal things like putting the washing on and yeah, making sandwiches, just really normalized stuff. And then, yeah, the few days after that was just lovely. My recovery went really well. And I think that's because the birth went really well and the delivery was fine. You know, I think the hardest thing really is just kind of the emotional side of I have to split my love for two, you know, children, which is lovely, but very hard when both those two children need your attention at the same time.
Mm.
I find that quite challenging. And, you know, I can see my daughter getting quite upset and that's, you know, that's quite hard. And I know she'll be fine, but that's been the main kind of pull, I think, in terms of, you know, how the postpartum period is going. Physically fine, I think, although there's still a little bit of prolapse situation that we need to get checked out. But yeah, it's the emotional side of having, you know, another child in your family, the adjustment, the kind of the change of routine and everyone's kind of emotions. It's like, okay, well, we need to kind of work this through together. It's going to take a little time, but it's not easy.
And it is a complete, even if you've done it before, when you're getting your second child, it's a new family constellation.
Yeah.
So you have to navigate these new relationships.
Absolutely.
And I guess it takes a while before everyone gets into their rhythm and new roles.
Yeah. I mean, we're 8 weeks, you know, since Evander was here and it was still finding our way. Mm. It's not a quick fix. You know, Finley is still struggling, I would say, when, for instance, when Evander is on the breast, having a feed, where does she go? How does she fit? She can't fit on mum. She wants to fit on mum. You know, mum feels a bit like, everyone's on me, and dad doesn't know where to kind of come in and help. And, you know, it's all those kind of things. Yeah, it takes a little while. The routine is, you know, flipped upside down again, and, you know, the sleep and all those kind of things. But it, at the same time, it's magical. You know, you have glimpses of like, wow, you know, and you know, there are moments where she goes, this morning, for instance, she kissed him on his face and he did a smile. He's at that stage where he's first smiling, and it's just like, oh, it's lovely.
Seeing those two together.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Thank you very much for sharing your story.
You're welcome.
It's very inspirational, fantastic. So thank you. And thank you, Naira.
Thank you.